This hour of Kevin Miller in the Morning is brought to you by Tway Travel, your adventure travel specialists, fighting for America.
And I think I need not remind anyone on this committee, like any American, Sergeant Bergdahl has rights, and his conduct will be judged on the facts, not political hearsay, posturing, charges, or innuendo.
Fighting for Idaho.
Hoping for the sake of the family that you all will go away and leave the family alone, let the process work. And let them get back to their normal lives.
Fighting for you.
Kevin, we cannot go on like this with nothing except speculation up in the media. I mean, he deserves better. We deserve better.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning.
I appreciate the chance to be with you again, brother. I look forward to being back out in Idaho. Thanks, Semper Fi.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
I'm Andy KIDO. Good morning. Kevin Miller with you. Always a pleasure to start your day. And I guess we call this Newsmaker Week. Joining us now is our friend Steve Ackerman. You catch him in the Gem State Patriot. You catch his academic work just about everywhere else. He, unlike folks in the media, actually Steve does research. So that's why we have him here to do our job for us this morning. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Kevin. How you doing?
Not bad. So let's talk a little bit about the post-primary Republican Party. Then we'll talk a little bit about business and maybe Bosnia and whatever else we can do to try and trip you up here. You worked for Senator Fulcher. You did a lot of research. The convention is coming up. What looms up north for everybody?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I don't think we're going to see a lot from the convention. A lot of the kind of pro-liberty, if you will, the conservatives, who really did take a shellacking, their argument is going to be that the platform will be watered down terribly. It's not clear to me that's going to happen. I believe what will happen is the establishment Republicans will pull together, and they will kind of almost double check each other. You know, we're all good here. We're all ready to go for honor, et cetera, and move forward. And I think they're going to try to have as little activity when it comes to the platform and the resolutions as possible. Basically, just kind of ignore them and figure we're running against a Democrat. Who cares about the platform at this point?
What about Barry? Is Barry Peterson, the chairman, in trouble?
There's definitely going to be competition. Yeah. I mean, Otter's comment that he's not endorsing anybody or not putting anybody forward, and certainly there's been some blowback from people like Labrador. I would say that's going to be an issue. Yes. There may very well be some challenge. I think what they hope to do is kind of do what we saw with a few of the races, and that is have a whole lot of people involved. In other words, have a lot of candidates. And if you can split the vote up enough, then you can almost try to come up with something brokered. Barry won a clear election last time in 2012. I was at that one, against Guyane DeMordan. It was a clean contest, regular contest. He won. But obviously, there's been issues between him and the governor in terms of positions and frankly, the governor's response to it. So I think it's going to be throw a lot of people out there and cut up the vote in so many, divide it up so much that you end up having to do some kind of a deal.
Steve Ackerman with us at 580KIDO. Okay, is the Idaho GOP the Labrador Party or the Otter Party?
Yes, good question. If you look at it from the county districts, Ada County, a perfect example, it's definitely the Otter Party. It is definitely the party of kind of establishment Republican, the very pro-liberty, let's gain access to our lands. A lot of the arguments that Fulcher made, they basically said, okay, fine. Fulcher won Ada County and Canning County, along with Kootenai and some of the others. That's fine. But you know what? We're going back to establishment. And so they basically engineered a pretty smart power take back. They took back the power. They knocked out Greg Birch right away. Fred Tillman went right up there. Right during the meeting. I mean, they didn't even wait till the end of the meeting. Yet they waited till the end of the meeting for others who had won. You know what I mean? The people who were in power, who then lost or were going to be leaving, they stayed throughout the whole meeting, but not the chairman. So it told you, take the head off. And so it was pretty clear and pretty brutal. To Tillman's credit, when there were some issues regarding delegate selection, and there was a real problem there, Tillman did allow everybody to have their point of view. The meeting went very long in large part because of that. So to Tillman's credit, he tried to, I think he was showing an outreach.
Right. It just, it seems to wonder there's bad blood everywhere. Could this help AJ Belukov?
Yes. The answer is it can. And it can, depending on, you know, what the reaction is to various Republicans. You know, if you're more liberty-minded Republicans, the kind of eclectic conservative groups, if they openly say, we're just not going to show up, then the establishment are going to make the argument, okay, we didn't lose because we didn't have a great candidate. We lost because you guys didn't show up. That will make the rift even worse. But the problem is, you have to have the establishment do some outreach. They have to reach out and say, you know, we won, but, you know, there's got to be some outreach by both sides, and we're not seeing that. What we're seeing is the establishment retake control of the party. So I don't know what's going to happen, to be honest with you. But we have a definite rift, and, yes, Belukov will be the gainer of it. But Belukov's got to do a lot of work. But, yes, he would be the recipient of it.
Well, let's talk about your old boss, Senator Fulcher.
Yes, sir.
What's next for him?
Well, you know, we've been talking, and you know, the thing I like about Russ is he's an idea guy, and he's a business he's a businessman. So he gets out there and he figures out, you know, what can work for people. How can we help other people? So he and I have been talking about some things around how can we help Idahoans, the average Idahoan. What can we do? Because, and I'm convinced of this, looking at the numbers, the message was resonating. You know, I mean, you can always Monday morning quarterback this stuff, right, and say if we did this, if we did that, 500 votes, 1,000 votes. But the bottom line is when people heard him and heard his message about high-wage jobs and about giving Idaho a vision instead of just having us wait and hope that some, you know, great company just happens to show up at our door, or continue reliance on the federal government for a budget, you know, people flock to him. So the short answer is it's some things. How can we help the average Idahoan? What can we do for them? You know, how can we do something that would help them in some different areas of public policy, I think, would be an interesting area.
Well, let's take a look at this. At 580KIDO, Steve Ackerman with us. Let's take a look at our economy. How much of we are we dependent on the federal till, and how independent are we of Big Brother Uncle Sam?
Yeah, we're actually becoming too dependent. And you know, if you were to go back to 2000, so take all the, you know, take the Otter versus Fulcher thing out of it, right? Just go back to 2000. More and more of our budget is being financed by the federal government. And if you look at just the latest statistics in terms of economic growth in Idaho, you know, the big areas that are growing, and you're not going to be surprised by this because actually you brought some of this up about 6 months ago, actually more than that, about 8 months ago, hospitality, you know, transportation, but really transportation like drivers, the service part of transportation, and some construction. I mean, that's been a lot of where we've seen our growth. We're basically a service economy. We're not, you know, we're not the manufacturing. And look, we're going to start having more problems because we're importing a lot of our electricity. EPA is cracking down on carbon emissions. So what does that mean? We're going to have to go to alternatives, which rely on more federal subsidies and state subsidies. And, you know, you're going to have losses like Transform Solar or something. So we're I would argue we're very much in trouble in this economy. And again, that's not a sour grapes thing over the campaign. That's just the composition of our economy. You know, we need to be able to foster growth that creates high wage jobs in the state, from the state, not from outside. We're too subsidy focused. We're way too dependent on the federal government. You know, 36% of our budget.
Is that possible, though, considering every state has a ton of money, i.e. Texas, to throw at these other states to these companies to bring them in.
Yeah, I think it is possible, and I think it's possible for two reasons. Number one, we do have an abundance of natural resources. The big problem with the argument of getting control of the federal land is the belief was go in and grab it tomorrow. Our argument, and again, not going back to the campaign, but our argument was access to federal land. Let's access the trees, the energy, the minerals. That allows for the creation of products that then feed off, that basically are coming from resources that are homegrown. And it also brings a ton of revenue back to the federal government and to the state coffers. So that generates, if you want to do economic development programs for the state, it gives them a ton more money to then focus on technology and use the technology platform. They just had a huge conference up in Moscow regarding how technology can help improve agriculture. Well, there you go. This is ag tech. This is one of the things, you can do with energy and obviously healthcare, because healthcare costs are going up. So the answer is yes. We have the resources. We also have the ability to generate cash, which then you can feed into an educated workforce that companies will want to be attracted to, and then keep your taxes low.
Right, but it's tough getting that educated workforce when you consider, the state of education here in the state.
Yeah, that's not going to happen tomorrow. The educated workforce is going to take a few years. But, we do have things like the Venture College at BSU, CWI. We do have some different programs out there. U of I has done some great research in natural resources. The key problem we have in Idaho is we're not connecting education to jobs. That's it. We don't do it. We this is why all the young people leave the state. They go somewhere else to get their jobs. They're like, I go to Salt Lake, or I go to Portland, or I go to LA or Bay Area, whatever. That's why they go there. And so we've got to make these connections. And if we don't make the connections, then we're going to be a service economy where, people cash out in a high, an expensive property state, and they come here and they drop money onto the house, and then they just kind of become a consumer. They live in the village. which is great, but you got to do more than just construction and service.
More coming up with our great friend Steve Ackerman. Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays noon till 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
We hope you're having a good morning. Hanging here with Kay Melly, 580 KIDO. One of our great friends, Steve Ackerman, joining us from the Gem State Patriot. Analyst, man of the world, a guy that's got it going on. Back to our economy, though. If you ran with Senator Fulcher, you did his research and everything else. The idea of jobs and a real future... how do we stop the brain drain when all these young kids are, getting their education and leaving?
Yeah, technology. That's a big piece right there. We're starting, but we are not pumping out the grads that we need to. The numbers are pretty bad. And this is why they go to Texas. They go to Austin, which has been out there for years. This is why they go to Silicon Valley and why they go to Southern California, even though it's heavily regulated and heavily taxed. This is why they go to Salt Lake. Bottom line is, technology can utilize technology for our natural resources, and we can utilize it for healthcare. We can also utilize it in terms of managing the tons of data that are out there in the retail space, in financial. There's a number of other areas. We're just not investing in it. And until we do, we're not going to be creating the high wage jobs. These jobs typically pay much more than a lot of your traditional jobs, certainly more than your service jobs.
Right. And again, that is the big mystery. Let's go continue on with some other economic news that you really did a lot of research for. Let's talk about the lands. And, the governor says we're not going to get our lands. Last week he disclosed that he's working on it now. What's the deal with the West and the lands?
Well, the problem is, I think the problem with the argument, and I think that was a challenge for us to break through the chatter. The chatter is you're either going to take federal land, and I'll use that word, take, or you're not. And that's, you know, that's a simplistic argument. That's not what it is. The issue is access to land. And that's what where our focus was, because a logging job pays on average $53,000 a year. Okay, or jobs kind of in that industry pay an average of $53,000 versus like 36 to 41. So the point is access to the land, but do it in a way that presents to the federal government, we will reduce fire damage, reduce damage to the environment, reduce healthcare damage from all the pollutants that go out into the air, people with respiratory illness, which is a cost, but also gets you, federal government, more tax money. Now, you know, Otter, you know, kept making the argument, it cost me $206 million. You know, I paid $14 million to fight fires. I ponied up that, and the federal government had to pony up $206 million. Where are you going to get that? Well, if you increased our access to federal land by 10%, you would get $246 million right there. Now, I don't know exactly what deal we have cut with the federal government. In other words, how much they get off those gross sales. But I can tell you that in Canada, logging is down. But in China, demand for wood is up. This is why we're starting to sell. We've been starting to sell more and more wood out of Idaho. Montana is not doing as great. This is an opportunity, and we're just kind of sitting here having this argument over control or not. The argument is access that gets everybody tax revenue and creates high-wage jobs. That's the argument to the federal government.
Like I said, again, it comes down to the federal government, whether or not they're going to listen to the West. We had a meeting a few weeks ago, actually a couple months ago in Salt Lake, where you had Speaker Betke and others, you know, with the American Lands Council, making this a regional, not just an Idaho issue.
Yeah, it is a regional issue. But the problem, again, I would argue, is if you show up to the federal government and you say, look, you're on this land, you shouldn't be on this land, we're gonna get you out of here. Okay, fine. I understand the underlying argument behind it. But the problem is they're there now. You know, the possession is 9/10 of the law, right? The guy who has control of the land is the guy you got to work with. And my argument is, and this is what we argued in the campaign, focus on the access and focus on the tax revenue and better management that will come from Idaho managing it. Yes, you move eventually toward control, but the first step is access. This is where Russ was from the beginning. And that, you know, that didn't necessarily get past that because people wanted control. And you know, and it is a Western issue, and the American Lands Council is on the right track. I would just argue that there's a fiscal argument here. There's an argument for budgets here, and that's going to work for legislators. And that's how you have to think about it as your first step. Make the economic case.
We'll see how that plays out. Steve Ackerman with us here at 580 KIDO. So are you surprised that Senator Fulcher will not run for the state GOP chairmanship?
In a way, no. I happen to like Barry a lot. I think Barry has done a good job.
Barry said he would step down if Russ would run.
Yeah, he did. You know, Barry's a gentleman. From my standpoint, I certainly appreciate it. I believe that Barry is a very good standard bearer for the position, and I think that's what that position is. It's the position of a standard bearer. Russ is in a different position. You know, he's a candidate, and now, you know, I mean, there's a couple avenues he has, but it's not to be, in a sense, that standard bearer. It's to be a doer. And I'm not saying that the chairman doesn't do things. The chairman does a lot. But a lot of what the chairman does is, you know, in showing up to things or in making statements or in managing meetings internally, he is ensuring that the philosophy and the platform of the party continue to move forward. That's really the job of the chairman. With everything going on, I just think Russ is a kind of a different kind of animal, you know, just stepping back as a political animal and frankly, as a business person and all he's done. It's a different position, and I just don't think the fit is great.
If you're A.J. Belukoff, what do you hope happens?
if I'm AJ Belukov, I hope that that Otter's camp continues to kind of work in a lackluster way, and that there is a depressed turnout among a lot of Republicans, either out of disgust or just, you know, the rift. My hope is the rift continues, and I hope that the establishment does not reach out to the more liberty-minded, kind of true Reagan-esque Republicans. But that's my hope. My hope is, you know, unlike Ford in 76, who did reach out to Reagan when he barely won by, I think, 3 votes, right, the Republican nomination for president, my hope is that Otter and Otter's folks dig in and just kind of look at it as we're divided and we're not going to reach out at all.
That's if you were AJ Belukov. That doesn't represent your views, right?
No, that doesn't represent my views. No, not at all. I'm talking as an analyst now.
All right, we'll have more with Steve Ackerman next. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Sean Hannity, weekday afternoons at 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
We hope you're having a good day. Let's make it even better. One of our favorite people here with us, Steve Ackerman, talking about state politics. We'll talk a little national stuff because you're a well-researched guy. That's what you do is just research.
Appreciate it. You bet. Yep, a lot of fun.
Well, back to Mr. Belukov. So he hopes that the rift happens. He hopes that the governor's staff does not start working, although Butch Otter is a hard worker on the trail.
Yes, that's true. When he gets out on the campaign trail, yes, that's very true. Yep.
Would we ever see Senator Fulcher and Governor Otter on the trail together? Could we?
I don't know.
And you're just speaking for yourself right now.
Yeah, I know. As myself, I kind of want to keep that confidential between anything Russ and I have talked about. I guess as an analyst, I think the important thing is, again, I'll just go back. Is there an outreach by the establishment to the more, you know, the more kind of true Reagan-esque? And then do they hear that? You know, do the liberty-minded kind of hear that and say, you're right, let's come together? Because, you know, the platform really gives everybody what they want. I mean, the more kind of pure Reagan-esque versus the more, you know, kind of say George H.W. Bush kind of wings of the Republican Party, more establishment, I guess I'll call it, the platform gives both of them something. And so, there, you know, if you wanted Ron Paul or if you wanted Mitt Romney, doesn't matter, you know, you get something out of that platform. So I do think that platform is important in uniting. Now, maybe that's something that, you know, I don't know, maybe that's something that Russ would see as important, that is something that he, you know, is very important to him. We certainly heard that. But I think, you know, I think the other thing is, I mean, this is Otter's fight to have. And, you know, he's running for reelection as governor and his position in the party. And, you know, in a sense, you don't want to take away from that either, you know, in terms of limelight.
Right. But again, back to the point of view. For the good of the party, could you see that?
I'll be honest with you. I think the most work in the party is going to occur among the party folks, among the party officers at the county level. I think that's more important than, you know, I guess some symbolism that would come from that. I really think that this needs to be fought out within the Republican Party. And I'll be honest, I don't know to what extent Otter should be kind of pulled in, or Russ, for that matter, both of them. You know, they ran as candidates, and they made their points. And, you know, the contest happened, and there it is. I think, frankly, the argument should be among party chairs in the different counties and you know, all the way down to the precinct folks. I think that's where the real work ought to occur, because that's a lot of what you have seen in terms of kind of the establishment response, especially in counties like Ada, you know, where I am. So I think that's where the onus ought to be, the responsibility ought to be.
All right, let's switch gears a little with Steve Ackerman, Kevin Miller at 580 KIDO. Let's talk a little bit about the Bergdahl situation and just the incredible reaction that has happened. Testimony in Congress, you've got people wondering what the heck's going on. Right. Wow.
Yeah, no kidding. That's really been something, hasn't it? The problem with this thing is so much information was not revealed. Obviously you were the first. People know where you've been on this. And frankly, I'm not saying this kind of as an accolade, but I mean, look, the bottom line is you were out there before everybody. I certainly picked up information from this show that I did not hear anywhere else. Yes, I sound like a commercial, but it's the bottom line. It's true. But this thing cuts a lot of ways. I agree with the idea that whatever happened, walked off, whether it was an intention to desert or what have you, I believe that it's the United States, it's the United States Army, it's the U.S. military that ought to reconcile this. That ought to, if those got to go through a trial or what have you, an indictment, that ought to be done by the U.S. I don't want the Taliban to keep holding an American. That said, I'm very disappointed with the way the president handled it. Number one, I don't like the fact that he did have this victory lap and brought in Bo's parents. I don't like the way he did that, the high-profile nature of the whole thing. And I think the president could have tried to cut a better deal. I'm not saying a prisoner swap should not have happened. I'm on record as saying that does happen. But the president is not a good executor of anything. He doesn't implement things well. And this was not the best deal. There's nothing wrong with a prisoner exchange. The Israelis have certainly done it. Others have done it. We have done it. However, you do want to make sure you have a good deal in place. And I'm concerned about the way they just handled it. Bo's been over there for a long time, okay? I mean, you're hitting 5 years. So you mean over this entire time with Gitmo detainees being there since before the Obama administration, they couldn't sit down and really think about this strategically in a way that would actually reach out to moderate Taliban, if there is such a thing, that will not create more problems in Afghanistan after we leave, given they wanted to leave from day one? I mean, these are serious questions, and they just kind of fell flat on that. So I don't blame Bo, and I don't blame his parents.
Yeah, but what about the visceral reaction to it? The quick to condemn Sergeant Bergdahl, whether it's at 580 KIDO or everywhere else.
That's right. I do think there was a quick reaction. I mean, they're going after the father having a beard. I mean, look, give the family some time. Leave them be for a while. And people are always not speaking English. Well, guess what he's been hearing 24/7 when he's in a cage? I mean, it doesn't mean that he is engendered with the – maybe he's thinking about it from collecting intelligence. Maybe he's thinking about it from, obviously, maybe I survive better if I speak their language because they won't be as abusive to me. There's a lot of things we don't know. And so I think there is a rush to judgment, and I think the family ought to have more time.
Well, whether that happens or not, who knows, and whether or not somebody can come back from what he's been through.
Yes, and that's a long-term question, isn't it? I mean, there are a few people asking that question. He is an American citizen. He's from here, so he's born here. So, I mean, I think we do need to understand that and, frankly, give him and his family a little bit of time. I think this has gotten a little bit trivial, to be honest, a little bit petty in the way the news has covered it.
More with Steve Ackerman next. We love being petty and trivial. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Time to get you to work safely and on time. That means Dave Burnett. That means...
Dave Ramsey, weekdays noon till 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller with you here this morning. Steve Ackerman, our man of the world, Gem State Patriot, analyst. He works on a lot of programs that we don't even know about, but that's why we've got him here. He's the smart one. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the VA scandal and just the enormity of this. You talk to any veterans, and they're going to tell you, look, the nurses are great, the doctors are great, but the bureaucracy kills them at the VA.
Yeah, what I always, you're exactly right. What I always hear is the care is wonderful, the people are wonderful, the caregivers are wonderful, but access, getting in, is the real bear. You know, that's the rub.
The rub indeed. So what about the administration's response and just these allegations? And, you know, we've already had one person step down, but, I mean, we do throw a lot of money at the VA. What's the solution?
Yeah, I don't think money has been the problem. I think the problem is pretty clear, and that is that that the official waiting lists were doctored, not only out of the Phoenix office or the Phoenix facility, but apparently there's, and I'm trying to remember, I think it's 41 others that are going to be checked out by the IG. The IG did have a report out in 2011 saying this exact thing. We now know that 1,700 veterans were not even on the official waiting list, even though they thought they were. And we now have 58 veterans who died, not 40. Meanwhile, the Obama administration thinks it's interesting to talk about climate change. Okay, sure, environmental issues are important. But, you know, when you have this happen, you know, that obviously takes precedence of our for our veterans. I think it just shows that Obama's not an effective manager. He, you know, I hate to quote Hillary Clinton, but you know, she said, "With me, you get experience; with him, you get a speech." And I think she hit it on the head. You know, campaigns often bring out the truth, and I think that's what it comes down to. I think it's a White House that is way too political. And I think it's a White House that kind of thinks that it can just shine enough that people will just overlook it. But the bottom line is they don't know how to execute. They failed on health care to execute. They failed on Benghazi properly. You know, there are kind of a series of things where they failed. This is the latest. I believe that the answer is going to have to be that mid-level management at VA is going to have to undergo a wholesale change. I would go right after that. I would go after regional managers, facility managers, and that's exactly it. The caregivers are doing a good job, but I think I would attack right in there the kind of senior to mid-level management, and I would ask the question, you know, connecting to bonuses, connecting to pay, basically performance is what I would go after directly.
580-KIDO, Kevin Miller with Steve Ackerman. But that would be a massive undertaking. Wouldn't you have to blow up the whole thing?
Yeah, it would be a massive undertaking. You would have to get rid of a lot of you'd have to make a wholesale change and actually streamline out a lot of the bureaucracy. I think it's also going to take a long time. In the immediate term, I have heard about, right, we've heard about giving vouchers, giving a certain amount of money, letting veterans get some care from a private doctor. I think that ought to be just issued immediately and get that out and at least get something in the next few months. For vets that, because we know that if there are 58 that died, we know there are many more who, you know, could experience, you know, not surviving. And if there are 1,700 that aren't even on a waiting list that we know of, then you investigate 41 more or, you know, what have you, roughly 41 more facilities, you're going to have that problem. So I would have an immediate cash infusion, and I'm sorry to say it, but utilize a FedEx or UPS, get them a car, get them a check. Get an account opened up. Let them just get to a doctor right away as a stopgap. I mean, that would be my move. But where is the president on something that obvious? You know, Congress should spend the money. They're spending more now than they have for years.
Right. But, Steve Ackerman, here's the issue. Look at Katrina. It was still a disaster for the feds to get rolling.
That's true. Katrina was. And that's why I think you need to go outside the bureaucracy, which, you know Bush was slow to respond there, and Obama's, you know, much more wedded to government, right, is the solution. He's a lot more, you know, he's going to be much slower. That would be my recommendation. Get some cash in the hands of the vets. Let them get going. Reconcile whatever claims and medical history later on. Don't worry about it. Have them go. Doctors are responsible. Veterans are responsible. They only have so much money. This would be reconciled in the market.
Steve Ackerman, if the governor gets reelected, are we getting Medicaid expansion and a fuel tax, in your opinion?
Yes to the fuel tax, and I believe we're going to have some form of Medicaid expansion. Yeah, we're going to have some version of it, yes.
So you're maybe going to be able to say, see, I told you so.
You bet. There you go.
No, I mean, in reality, isn't that...
Yeah.
You know, isn't that what the rumor mill is?
Yeah, it is what the rumor mill is, and I think that it's I would predict it, yes. I would predict both.
What would be that? We've got about a minute and a half left. What would be the impact in Idaho on a fuel tax on us, raising the fuel tax per gallon?
Well, the problem is going to be that you're going to undermine a lot of the small businesses here. You know, small business is a huge percentage of our economy. They're going to get hurt, and obviously the consumer is going to get hit with higher fuel costs, and EPA is not helping anywhere here. So it's simply going to be, you know, it's going to cost more to do things.
And that is never good. What about Medicaid?
Medicaid, we will become more dependent on the federal government. We are going to rely upon a future promise, and their budget does not look good.
Wow. More federal dependency. Steve Ackerman, as always, we appreciate it. Thank you for your time, sir.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Have a great day.
You too. Take care.
All right. Appreciate it. That's our great friend, Steve Ackerman. Kevin Miller with you here. Lots of great information, and, of course, we'll be there. Giving you each side of the perspective. If a fuel tax increase is going to go through, we'll be there as the voice of your voice. So if you agree with that, that's great. If not, you'll always have a home here at 580 KIDO. And don't forget, you're listening to Kevin Miller right here on 580 KIDO.